Are you tired of that one person that always stirs up drama on D&D nights? Click on the link in the show notes to learn about a workshop experience that might be for you.
Welcome to The Compendium, a resource designed to help you spend less time learning D&D and more time actually playing.
Let's talk about the different halfling sub-races that you get to pick from when you are building a halfling character.
So the most common is going to be the Lightfoot halfling. Even the book kind of calls it out. Like they're the ones that are kind of more nimble, and they're a little more slight of build. And in the Forgotten Realms, at least, they're the ones you can find almost anywhere. They're kind of really integrated into like everything. And so for them, for the Lightfoot halflings, in addition to what you already get for just being a halfling, just the table stakes, you also get a +1 to your charisma, which makes a lot of sense. We talked about relationships before. And then they're also naturally stealthy. So you can attempt to hide even when you're obscured only by a creature that is at least one size larger than you, which of course is almost everyone. So these are great for like kind of roguish things, like our Tolkien burglar example, or even like bards and things like that. These people really have integrated into larger multi-race societies. And so they're affable, and they've learned how to just kind of get out of the way of other things happening around to keep themselves safe.
Yeah, I had a halfling, I think it was when I was playing through Lost Mines, that as their bonus action every turn because of their class, I think it was rogue, I don't entirely remember, they were able to take hide as the bonus action.
Yeah.
So after the end of every turn, they would just go run and hide behind one of their party members.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they always stayed within like their distance, and they'd be like, as a bonus action, I'd like to hide. And that just became our catchphrase at the table, because every single turn in combat, as a bonus action, I'd like to hide. It was very effective for them, especially because I think with the rogue, then you can get your sneak attack if you're not seen and some other stuff. And so like that stuff can really build if you pay attention to it.
Yeah.
Is there anything else notable about the Lightfoot other than being a little bit more stealthy and their ability score increase, and like just the fact that they're probably a little bit more common to see?
Yeah, not really. I think they're just kind of what we typically think of when we think of halflings. I mean, if we wanted to, this would be very much, Frodo is a Lightfoot, whereas the next one, the Stout, is more like Samwise and kind of like what they're good at and things. So yeah, that's kind of it for the Lightfoots.
Okay. So let's dive into Samwise, as you put it.
the Samwise... Gosh. All right. Anyway. Okay. So the Stout halflings, they're a little bit more hardy. They're more like, as the name is just stout, a little stocky. And the lore here says that some of them even say that they have dwarven blood in them. And so what for them, in addition to the table stakes of just being a halfling, they also get a +1 to their constitution, which is really nice. Anytime you can get a +2 to your constitution, you should go for it. And they have advantages on saving throws against poison, and they have resistance against poison damage.
Unsurprisingly, with con. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And when they have a +1 with the con, so it's even easier. And so, again, it's that kind of like nod that there might be a little like a dwarven commingling going on there for those guys, because it's just like it says for the dwarven entry as well. So, yeah, so those are the stout ones. Those, in my mind, like as we've read the lore, these are the ones who are like off in their own communities that eventually will venture out. They're not hiding. They're just content to live in peace and harmony, whereas the Lightfoots are the ones who are going to be kind of intermixed with larger, like, you know, elf and human and dwarf and gnome society. Like you go into a city like Waterdeep where it's just everything. I think that the Lightfoots would be there. And then if you go to like a city that's or a township that's just all halflings, that might be more stouts.
That makes a little bit more sense too, because like when you were talking about stouts, it just made me think of like the people that are having to grow and make all their own food and churn their own butter and like do the basically like the farm work, if you will, the heavy lifting. Whereas the halflings that are maybe living in different types of communities, well, I'll just pay you to do that for me.
Yeah.
So they're not going to like build those muscles the same way because they have like a different access to resources. So in that regard, it makes a lot of sense to me too.
Right. And so now these are the only two subraces that are in the player's handbook. And there's some other like subraces in the Eberron book. And if you look in D&D Beyond, you might see like the different like dragon shard marks for those, but those are more or less basically the same as what we've already covered. However, there are two other subraces that you can find in the Sword Coast Adventurers Guide, which is really great, and a lot of people overlook it because there's some really great options in there, and it was published really early on in fifth edition's history, and so a lot of people came into the game after it was published, and so it gets overlooked. And one of them is the Ghostwise Halfling, which is pretty phenomenal, because the idea with these is they've taken that, hey, we're going to live off by ourselves and kind of keep ourselves safe by obscurity up to 11. And so they are much more, we don't mix with other people. We don't really like outsiders coming in. We just want to do our own thing and live in peace. You guys can go off and fight your wars and deal with your dragons and fight with dwarves. Like, we don't care. We're just going to be over here. And so they're very clannish and mistrustful of outsiders. And so they're very kind of secretive. And in the lore, it has them living in like one specific place, kind of off in a corner there in the Forgotten Realms.
It reminds me of, again, Tolkien, or at least like, you know, the Lord of the Rings movie, when Gandalf is coming to the Shire and the hobbit couple that are outside and they're just glaring at him because they know he's up to no good.
Like, yeah. That's tall kinda, wizards.
Yeah. They're an outsider. They don't belong here. What's going to happen? Yeah. I don't think you should be here. That kind of mentality.
Yeah. Those Baggins always consorting with weird people now, and unsightly for behavior for a halfling. Exactly. So with the Ghostwise Halflings, they get an additional bonus to their wisdom score, which is kind of fun. So that makes great for perception checks and also things like clerics that need to use wisdom for their stuff. That's fun. And then they have something called silent speech. So they can speak telepathically to any creature within 30 feet of them.
And that's just, so I know that there's some creatures that can do that, but it's through like spores or other types of mechanic. This is just like, oh, is it magical? Where does that fall on the spectrum? Well,
so here's the thing. I don't think it's magical. I think it's psionic. It's just like, it's like Professor Xavier or Jean Grey. It's just like they have telepathy. It's not a magical effect. It is a mental effect. And so they can speak telepathically to any creature within 30 feet, and they can only understand you if you share a common language. And they can only do it one at a time. So it's not a big hive mind. It's like they can, it's all the same rules as verbal speech, but it can be done telepathically. Yeah, so those are super cool because generally speaking, if you want to be able to have like telepathy in D&D, you have to like become a warlock with the patron of the the ancient gods or whatever they call it. I forget what it is now, where you get telepathy. But this is just a race that just starts with telepathy, and I think that's super awesome.
It makes sense too, like if they live in their own, like all of that makes sense. Now, you mentioned a second subrace that's in that same lore that piqued my interest when you had mentioned it before we started recording, which was the Lotus Den.
Yes.
And I like am all about the lotus flower in general. And so do tell, because as soon as you said that, I was like, I want to know more about what the Lotus Den are.
Yeah. So just a quick point of order here. In their description, it says that long tied to the natural heart of the Lotus Den Greenwood, these halflings have adapted to live synergistically with the chaotic laws of the wilds. So they're leaning more towards like some more of the fey creatures, though they are not fey themselves. I also think it's really funny that there is a place called the Greenwood, probably named for Ed Greenwood, who basically created most of the Forgotten Realms. And this is in the Sword Coast Adventurers Guide. So there's probably some fun little things there too. So they also get an ability score increase of 1 to their wisdom. So the same as the Ghostwise. And then they have 2 more. And here they actually do have some innate magical abilities. They're the Child of the Wood, which means they learn the Druidcraft craft cantrip. And at 3rd level, they can cast the Entangle spell once per long rest. At 5th level, they gain Spike Growth once per long rest. And they use wisdom, of course, for the spellcasting ability for these. So they're like little, like mini druids,
yeah,
like, naturally. And so this matches very well with things that you'll see with like tieflings when we do those guys, that they have some, and like the drow, they have some innate magic that levels with them, not because of their class, but because of the race. And it's very woodsy, druid-ish kind of tinge to it all.
Yeah, that would probably be a great combo with our ranger.
Yeah, that would be really cool, actually. I like that a lot.
Right.
And, or you mix it, match it with different things. Like make him a barbarian, you know, they can just cast entangle and I don't know. Anyway. And then they have Timberwalk. So ability checks made to track you have disadvantage. And you can move across difficult terrain made of non-magical plants and undergrowth without expending extra movement. So these are straight up wood assassins. They can just sneak through the trees unseen because of their small stature. They can go through the underbrush and no one will, they won't get caught. They can lure people into traps. They can cause traps with the spike growth and the entanglement spell. And they still have their +2 to dexterity because they're halfling still, and destroy you with arrows, or ask you why you are in their wood, before they call on their much scarier allies who live in that forest as well. So yeah, I like the Lotus Den ones a lot.
Yeah, I am not disappointed. And now I'm like, where is there a game I can join that I can play this now? It's like the first thought going through my head.
Yeah. Wonderful. I'm super hyped on like the Ghostwise ones as well. Cause I'm all like, I didn't realize that they could do telepathy. That's kind of neat. Yeah. I kind of have an assassin character in mind now of Ghostwise, Hobbit, halfling. So yeah.
So what are some of your favorite, I mean, we've mentioned a couple, but let's close this out by talking about what some of your favorite combinations are. If you're going to play a halfling, what do you think are some really interesting way to leverage their innate traits or kind of like qualities?
Yeah. So I think that, typically speaking, because you have that bump to dexterity, and you've got the nimbleness that you can kind of hide behind things really easily, as you said, that rogue is a natural choice. And also because of the Tolkien combination, it's also a natural choice as well to have that burglar in your party. But there's other options as well, especially if you're going to be picking something like a ranger, or even a druid. That would be really nice too, because you have things like bonus to constitution or bonuses to wisdom with the other sub races we picked. And so anything that's going to be using range as an attack, it might be really nice to pick. Oh yeah,
because of that dex too, because that's
right.
That's the number you use for ranged attacks. That makes a lot of sense.
Exactly. So a fighter with an archery specialty fighting style, rangers would be really good for this as well, especially if you do the Lotus Den, or even if you decide that you're going to be like a bard, because of the Lightfoot halfling, where you get the bonus to charisma. That's great too, because there's a ton of finesse weapons you can choose from as well. And because of that relationship, and bards are natural storytellers and they travel from town to town telling tales and gathering stories and seeing new and novel things, there's a really easy narrative and statistical reason to make a bard as well. I mean, I'll always recommend bard, but I think this time it's warranted for the halflings. So anything along that kind of roguish spectrum, or anything that has ranged attacks, I think halfling's a good choice.
Thanks for equipping the compendium. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already done so, since episodes are published every Tuesday and Friday, or Monday and Thursdays if you're a patron on our Patreon account. If you enjoy listening each week, a great way to help support the show outside of contributing to our Patreon is just by sharing a link to this episode with one of your friends that you think might like it too. We hope to see you back in a few days for the next episode, where we're going to be continuing our discussion, delving further into the world of D&D.